you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is I Knew It, and the numbers to call to explore your own sort of deeper intuition, and I'll talk more about what I mean by that. 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. 866-254-1579. Outside of the U.S. and Canada, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I am going to set the table. I occasionally set the table and then eat all the food for myself and don't take calls, but I will do my best to get to you. But it is funny. I realized in putting the show together that I think this is my 14th year on air with Hay House Radio, and I don't think I have ever done a show on intuition, because I kind of felt like, of all the people at Hay House, you know, there's enough people who are professional psychics and intuitives that for me to do a show on one on it seemed silly. But actually then I realized, no, that's the point. I think when it comes to intuitive phenomena, psychic phenomena, we tend to think that's something that's a gift that some people have and others don't. And so we discount our own inner knowing because it doesn't fit the form of what we think of as a psychic or an intuitive or a fortune teller or whatever version of it we've got. I looked up psychic before the show because I suddenly realized, oh, I don't actually even know what that word officially means. And it came up adjective, faculties or phenomena apparently inexplicable by natural laws. And I thought, oh, okay, that makes sense. Faculties or phenomena apparently inexplicable by natural laws, which just tells me that we obviously don't really understand natural laws. Because if it exists in nature, if it exists in our world, then there's some reason that it exists. You know, there's a line in Hamlet where he says he sees his father's ghosts and he says, there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. Well, I don't know the whys and wherefores that we can know things that we seemingly shouldn't know, but we clearly can see things that we think we shouldn't know. I just had the most bizarre version of this for myself. My wife, I was just telling Steve that in the studio that he said, how's it going? And I said, yeah, not great. And it's because my wife fell down a flight of stairs and broke both her legs, and we were supposed to be going on holiday. And that isn't going to happen. And somebody at the hospital said, well, did you take out insurance? I was like, no, I never take out insurance. It never occurs to me to, and we've never had a real problem. And then I went online to check the tickets, and somehow back in March, I took out insurance. Now, I can't explain that. Right? I have no idea. That's the first time in my entire life I've taken out travel insurance. Cool. Now, if I hadn't, and this happened, I can pretty much guarantee you I would have gone, oh, I knew it. I should have done it. Because something in me obviously did. I don't even remember doing it. That's the level of intuition. That's the level of inner knowing that I wanted to explore. That's the level of a faculty that we all have, of a phenomena that we've all experienced that is apparently inexplicable by natural law, but in fact simply must be part of the human potential. So not that I'm suddenly going to go out and pick new lottery numbers or do something like that. But it's just evidence that at some level, we know a lot more than we think we do. And we know things that are inexplicable to not natural laws, but inexplicable to logic and rational thought. See, we live in a culture that kind of worships logic and rational thought. And then there's a counterculture, and you're part of it if you're listening to Hay House Radio, and I'm part of it because I'm on Hay House Radio, that almost goes the other way and goes, ha-ha, to heck with rational thought. We know stuff. But both are true. Both have their place. There's a quote that I've heard attributed to many, many different people, so I won't bother with an attribution because, you know, go online and pick one of the six people it's attributed to. But that the mind, the rational mind, makes a wonderful servant and a terrible master. It is one of the uses of the mind. It is not the only use of the mind. It is ideal for some things and terrible for others. And one of the things that it is predictably terrible at is predicting the future. We try and logic the future as if life was a linear unfolding. A causes B causes C. Well, you don't have to have been alive for very long to get that it doesn't work that way. Like, I always think back. So we're in the midst of moving house, which we've done a few times, but this, we're actually selling the house we bought when we first moved to America almost 20 years ago. And the way we found this house, so I had come out to Los Angeles from London, where we'd been living for 14 years. And I came out to kind of explore and see where we might want to live in LA. And the one thing that I was very clear on from that visit was I did not want to live in Woodland Hills, which is where I live. And but we found sort of temporary accommodation, a nice place, a nice transition place that we could rent month to month, and had a swimming pool, which is really exotic if you live in London, less exotic if you live in California. And so we thought, oh, okay, we'll stay there. I budgeted 6 months in this place while we look around and see where we might want to live in LA. Cause at that point it was, the kids were still preschool. So we weren't bound to any particular area, and we could kind of pick by school districts that we wanted to live in. Well, what happened was, about 2 months before we moved, we got a letter from this place saying, hey, the place that we were going to, that you looked at, that you picked out, isn't available, but don't worry, we picked out an even better place. It's a place we charge more for, but we'll charge you the same amount. And I knew it. I knew there was something up, but I didn't do anything about it. I just got like, oh, okay. Well, I'm, you know, and I logicked myself out of it. I was like, well, that's, I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure it'll be fine. Well, we got there, we arrived, and it was pouring rain. It was, you know, California's been dry for almost 10 years until last year, but it was monsoon type weather when we arrived. And we got there, and there was no record of us. There were no keys for us. It was a bank holiday weekend, a sort of a long holiday weekend. So there was no one there. No one was going to be there for 3 days. We finally actually convinced the security guard. I think we just looked so bedraggled to let us in with a master key because, you know, we just clearly we were the worst criminals ever if we were criminals. And it went downhill from there. Like, this place leaked everywhere, and it was almost like a magical leak, a leak apparently inexplicable by natural laws, because wherever we'd move the baby's crib, that's where the leak would move. So it was like a I don't know, like a Harry Potter curse or one of those comedy cartoons where I think it's Pigpen, where no matter where he goes, dust follows him, you know, or a cartoon character where no matter where they go, it's raining only on them. It was like that. Wherever we moved the baby crib, that's where the next rain started leaking through the ceiling. And so we suddenly realized we're not going to stay here 6 months. We weren't sure we were going to make it a week. And so we didn't know what to do. Now, here's part of the cool thing about seeing that we have an inner knowing is we don't always know instantly what to do. But we know that we'll know when we know. We know that if we stay with it, at some point we will know. And so I didn't know what to do about that, but I knew we needed a car. So we went, went for a test drive. We just found the closest car dealer. And on the test drive, we passed a house with a for sale sign. Now, it would be a cool story, a super cool story, if that house wound up being the house we lived in for the next 19 years and raised our family in. It wasn't. In fact, it wasn't right for us at all. But the realtor we'd call to show us that house talked to us for a little while and said, you know, there's a neighborhood not too far from here that's very European. There's a lot of European families that just happen to live there. And it's much less like LA and much more like what you probably are used to. Would you like to see it? So we did. We went to this really cool neighborhood, and there was one house available. And it when my wife actually and my mother-in-law, who'd come with us to help with the move, went, because I was trying to set up work stuff, and they went on a Friday, and for whatever reason the realtor's key didn't work. You know, they have these special master keys that they can use to get into the houses that they're showing. And there was a very scary sounding dog, as my wife reported it later, behind the door. So it wasn't even like that they could keep trying, because they just were like, okay, let's just leave this one. But they liked the look of the place from the outside. And so it was kind of, we talked about it. No, should we go back and see it? And it was a little expensive for us. And well, on the Monday, the realtor called back and said, hey, they've just dropped the price of this house by $100,000. Do you want to go back and look at it? My wife was like, yeah. And she went, and we fell in love with it. And the long and the short is, 6 weeks after we arrived in America, we moved into the house that we've lived in for the last 19 years that we raised our family in. Now, this is all just a very elaborate illustration of how life actually works. See, I had a plan. I had a rational plan. It was a good plan. I'd blocked out the time. I'd planned the different neighborhoods we would look to. I'd contacted realtors in the different neighborhoods to do all this stuff. I'd allotted enough time. I'd flown my mother-in-law. I had done everything right. And that's the way it actually unfolded. Now, there is no version of rational reality, of linear reality, where my plan would have been, hey, let's move into a place that's falling apart and then take a test drive, find a realtor who'll take us to a neighborhood, and then not get into the house when we go to see it until they've lowered the house down back into our price range so that we can buy it. But you've got to have stories like that. You've got to have all sorts of instances in your life where things unfolded perfectly, but utterly unexpectedly. Not in a way that could have ever been planned for. And that's why I love, my favorite metaphor for how life works is it unfolds. We are part of a divine unfolding. And if life unfolds, you can't possibly know what is going to be revealed in the next bit of the unfolding. It's irrational by nature. It's non-linear by nature, which means trying to navigate it rationally, trying to logic your way through life, is a really illogical way to go about it. And yet, we're not screwed. We're not hopeless. We're not in a position where, oh, well, I guess it's just going to be, you know, utter chaos for the rest of my life. We have an inner knowing. And sometimes we follow it, and we don't know why we followed it. We just do, and it works out. And sometimes we ignore it almost willfully. And then when things go the way we kind of knew they would, we go, I knew it. I should have listened. Why didn't I listen? Well, you didn't listen because you didn't know that you knew it. We're not used to really thinking that we have that same capacity in us that we witness in our favorite intuitive, our favorite psychic, or whoever it is that we rate as somebody who has that inner knowing, who has that deep intuition, who has that psychic ability. Or this is the other way I've seen it go. We think we've got it, but other people don't. Well, I'm psychic, but you know, you poor people, you don't really have that in you. Now, all I can tell you is I have worked with tens of thousands of people over 32 years professionally. Forget however many people I've met, as you, I'm sure, will have met in 32 years if you're at least 32 years old. I have never met anyone who doesn't have moments of absolute clarity that make no sense whatsoever, of absolute knowing that they don't know how they know, they just know. Now, if you know that you'll know when you know, if you know that that inner knowing, the inner yes, the inner no, is as or more reliable than the most logical logic you can come up with, then you just begin to attend to it in a different way. You begin to pay attention at a whole other level. There's a wonderful Winston Churchill quote I've always loved, that most men stumble across the truth from time to time, and then they get up, dust themselves off, and carry on as if nothing happened. Well, that's us. Most of us stumble across our inner knowing from time to time, our intuition, our psychic ability, whatever you want to call it. And then we get up, dust ourselves off, and carry on as if it was a fluke. As if, well, yeah, that was weird. Anyways, back to the logic, back to planning, back to figuring it all out in advance. The problem with trying to figure it all out in advance is that it's an unfolding. It doesn't work that way. My first book with Hay House is called You Can Have What You Want. But when I actually pitched it back in 2005, the title was Soul Path, which I found greatly amusing. Those of you, some of you will know the story if you've been listening for a long time. But Hay House didn't, they loved the book, but they didn't like the title because they thought it sounded too spiritual. And I don't know if I said out loud or I just thought, you guys publish books about UFOs, angels, and aliens, and Soul Path is too spiritual. But anyways, we found an accommodation. We found a middle ground. We renamed the book. But the reason that I wanted to call it Soul Path was because I had the experience, particularly with my most successful clients, and I'd worked with some very, very successful people in all sorts of different fields. Their lives unfolded in ways that were so far beyond the imagination, that were so non-linear, that it looked almost as though their own soul, the deepest part of them, was laying out a path, step by step, brick by brick, next step by next step. It was a way of being that I think is beautifully summed up. There's a lovely book called The Rich Man's Secret, or A Rich Man's Secret, by Ken Roberts. And there's a line in that book that gets repeated again and again and again. Take the first step, no more, no less, and the next will be revealed. Now, you could stop there. We could stop there. We could stop at the level of a conversation about, hey, here's all you have to do. Take the next step, no more, no less, and the next will be revealed. Okay, on to the next topic. What I've seen, particularly in the last decade or so, last 12, 13 years now, since I came across the Inside Out understanding that this show is all about, this deeper understanding of the principles behind life, the fundamental laws of the universe, is that there is in everyone a connection to the whole. We have an innate, real-time, responsive intelligence. In other words, there is something in us that knows, but it only knows in real time. In other words, it knows when it's relevant. It doesn't show up, generally speaking, for most people that I meet, about things that you're not interested in, about things that you're not engaged in. So if I'm thinking about, well, what am I going to do in 6 months? You know, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? Who is the person for me forever? Well, it doesn't seem to kind of deal with that very often. But it absolutely lets you know what you want for dinner, which movie you want to go see, whether or not to say yes to the date or no to the date, whether or not to say yes to the deal or no to the deal or renegotiate the deal. It is an inner knowing, a real-time, responsive intelligence. So if we take that behavioral prescription, take the first step, no more, no less, and the next will be revealed. Well, why would that be if we're not going to just chalk it up to psychic phenomenon, a phenomena that is apparently inexplicable by natural laws, and we're going to actually seek a natural explanation? Well, then the reason that that works, the reason that life seems to unfold that way, is because we have a real-time responsive intelligence, which means it needs something to respond to in the moment, which means you need to show up. You need to take the first step, to take the next step, and then you'll know, because until then, a real-time responsive intelligence can't do anything until you're in real time and have something to respond to. So when you're sitting on the sidelines wondering what you'll do if you got in the game, it doesn't work that way. All you've got from the sidelines is memory and imagination. You can remember what you've done or what you've read about other people doing in similar sounding circumstances, or you can imagine what you would do or what other people would do in similar seeming circumstances. But neither of those faculties are this real-time responsive intelligence. That intelligence won't kick in, can't kick in, until you get out of the stands and into the arena, until you are actually in the game. That's why probably the number one piece of advice that I give people is get in the game and then figure it out. My middle daughter graduated university recently and is just at a stage right now where she's beginning to look at possibilities for work. And she's got some kind of ideas, some kind of inklings, some little hints of what she might like to do. And then she's logicking the heck out of them and talking herself out of them. And when I was speaking with her about it day before yesterday, she was going, well, yeah, I mean, I think I might like this, but I don't know if I'd like it. And it, here's all the reasons it appeals to me. And here's all the reasons. In other words, she was trying to be reasonable. We think, oh, well, that's good. She's trying to be reasonable. But reason is a terrible navigational tool. Really good for working through logic. Really useless for working through nonlinear processes like life. So I said to her, well, look, why don't you try it? Why don't you get in the game? Why don't you take the first step, no more, no less, and see what next step is revealed? And she said, well, I mean, I don't want to just start and then quit a week later. And I laughed because I'm sure at some point in her life, I must have said, you know, I didn't raise no quitter or something to that effect. But I said to her, well, what if it wasn't about quitting? What if it was about learning? Like, how are you going to know if you don't try? How are you going to learn if you won't put yourself into a learning opportunity? It doesn't actually, it's not even rational. Even if you wanted to be rational, it would be rational to give it a go. And there are so many situations in life where we've spent all our energy thinking about it, talking ourselves into things that we don't really want to do, talking ourselves out of things that we absolutely know to do, justifying, judging, that we have very little energy left to just live. We are so out of touch with the present moment that we have very little presence. But presence of mind is the space in which a real-time responsive intelligence can respond. We live distracted culturally. It's not you. I mean, it is you, it is me, but we do live in a culture that encourages distraction. I don't know if you've noticed that. I don't know if you have a phone. But even before phones, people were distracted by their thinking. That's one of the reasons that we use a phone, is to distract ourselves from our thinking. Right? I don't think our phones particularly distract us from life. I think they distract us from our thinking, and our thinking distracts us from life. Our thinking distracts us from the moment. And what if it didn't? Like, what if you could trust that a real-time responsive intelligence your own inner knowing, your own deeper mind, was always available to you. And you could use it to navigate. You could use it as your compass. You could trust it to guide you and spend at least less time trying to think everything through and more time in the game. You probably know people. This is very common. I find this all the time in my work, both on this show and in the courses that we teach and when I'm working one-on-one with clients, where people will learn this. They'll see it. They'll get a real feel for it for themselves. And then they'll go, you know, my husband that doesn't listen to any of this stuff, but he just does this naturally, or my friend or my wife or my kid, or, you know, we all have somebody in our life who is utterly disinterested in all this stuff, but just seems to really kind of find their way through life with a great degree of elegance and ease. And what I've noticed about those people is just for whatever reason, they're more interested in life than they're thinking. They're more interested in playing the game than thinking about the game, than figuring out the game, than deciding if it's the right game. And the reason they tend to do well, and doing well is a relative term, but the reason they tend to thrive in whatever circumstance they're in is simply because they're using the equipment the way it is designed. They are using apparently inexplicable natural laws with no consciousness that it's a natural law. It's what they know to do. So in a way, you know, those of us who are drawn to this kind of work, part of why we're drawn to it is because we've been trying to function in a different way. We've been trying to make sense of the world through our rational, logical thinking mind. But the world doesn't make sense. Concepts make sense. The conceptual mind is brilliant at conceiving. It's brilliant at conceptualizing. It's brilliant at ideating, at coming up with ideas and concepts and navigating them. But life is not a concept. Life is in the living. When I used to teach NLP, we talked about a category of transformational grammar of language called nominalizations. And a nominalization is a verb that sounds like a noun. It's a process that we talk about as if it was a thing. So we'll talk about intuition as if intuition is a thing. But intuition is the process of intuiting. We talk about logic as if it is a thing, but logic is the process of logically working your way through a series of yes-no loops and options. Decision points, probably more than loops. And life is the ultimate nominalization. There's not really a thing called life, but there is a process of living. And in any moment, we're either in life, in the living of life, or we're in our heads, we're in our conceptual minds. Now, the conceptual mind isn't the enemy. The conceptual mind's not bad. The conceptual mind is what lets us conceive of so many cool things. But like the logical mind, it makes a wonderful servant and a terrible master. And you'll know if it's mastered you or you've mastered it by how engaged in life are you, in your own life are you, how engaged in the world are you. And if you are completely disengaged from the whole thing and you live in your head, well, then the conceptual mind is in the role of master and you are in the role of servant. And that's just not natural. It might be normal, but it's definitely not natural. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I do have a tendency to set the table and then eat all the food myself. So if you do want to join me in this conversation, please do. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, you can dial 001-760-918-4300. But I'm not done. So let me kind of continue to play with this, but maybe come at it in a slightly different way. There's a my most recent book with Hay House. It's called Creating the Impossible. And the subtitle of that book, or the bit of the subtitle of that book that's relevant to what I want to talk about, is how to get your ideas out of your head and into the world. Now, that's something a lot of people want, right? They have all these really cool ideas for what they could do in their life, what they could do for work, what they could do with their partner, what they could do with their kids, what they could do for the world, in the world, for themselves. But it never happens. They're on a path to die with their music still in them. And so for me, one of the most powerful things we can learn is how to let the music out, how to dance to the music, how to respond to life, how to be in life, how to get in the game and play full out and fearless. Well, one of the reasons we don't, I think it's one of the primary reasons we don't, is that we don't know that we're not. Right? Because you can get so into concepts that it feels like you're in the game because your mind is busy and you're always thinking about stuff. But that's not being in the game. That would be like thinking about a house and, oh man, wouldn't it be cool? And oh, it would look like this. And oh, in my dream house, I'd have this. Like, we used to design dream houses as kids, and mine had a secret entrance to an underground passage through a pool table. So basically how it worked, you press the button and the pool table kind of slid to the side and there was a staircase. You went down the staircase and then you went into this underground glass tunnel that went under the swimming pool in the house and then came up into another part of the house. Now, it was really fun to think about, but I still don't live in that house. Well, we do that, take that, multiply it by 30, multiply it by 30 years, multiply that by most of your life. And we spend an inordinate amount of our mental, physical, spiritual energy, our time and attention on thought, and relatively little of it on playing the game. Now, that may not be true of you. You may be a doer. You may be in the game. But chances are, even if you are in the game, there's still a huge part of you that thinks that you need to figure it out, that thinks that you need to be the one to work it out, that you need to be the one to make it happen. And that's an interesting concept, but it's not a natural law. You are involved. I don't know how to play the game without being in the game. But what makes a game is that you might win and you might lose. If you've got small kids, there may be games they love to play that you can't stand. Games like chutes and ladders. Games like, I don't know, depending on the age of your kids, maybe, you know, chess or checkers, where you are either so much better than them that it's not fun, because in order to make it interesting, you have to really work to make it interesting because you know you're going to win. Or you get that it is totally random who wins and loses, that there's no skill involved. And so it's not a particularly fun game. What makes a game fun is that there's a real chance when you get into the game that you might win. But there's also a real chance when you get into the game that you might lose. If you can't lose, it's not much incentive to play. And if you can't win, there's not much incentive to play. But if you know that you could win or lose, that's what makes a game worth playing. Well, life, anything in life, is a game that you could win or lose. And one of the reasons that Creating the Impossible became thematic in my own coaching practice is because a lot of people pre-decide that the game they really want to play, there's no way they can win. So they don't play it. Well, I mean, what I really want is to, you know, learn how to do this so I can go to my village. And this is an actual conversation. Obviously, I didn't just pull this out of my head, but go to my village in Ghana and build houses the way that that houses are built in America so that they're really stable and strong. But my goal is to make more money as a taxi cab driver. Well, that's just a very classic example of we've decided with our logical mind that there's no way from here to there. So why bother getting in the game? Well, the reason it's worth getting in the game is because you have an inner knowing. There is a part of you that just knows, but it's only active when you're in the game. It is a real-time responsive intelligence, which means it requires you being in real time, not in your head, and something to respond to. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's start with Jennifer in LA. Jennifer, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
I was piqued, my interest was piqued with your comment that the mind is not a good master. And so what would you say is the best thing to follow or, yeah, to lead with?
So for me, and I'm going to say up front, I'm probably going to language this wrong. So if you can kind of dance around what words I use and see if you can see where I'm pointing. Mm-hmm. To me, life seems to unfold most perfectly when you let this deeper intelligence be the master. When you, in a way, let life guide. Some people would say let God guide. Some people would say let the deepest part of you guide. Some people would say let your highest self guide. So it's very rarely the part of ourselves that we think of as me. That's why the metaphor in so many religions and spiritual teachings is of surrender to a master or a guru or to God. Now, whether you conceive of that as being outside of you or as being a part of you or as actually being your truest, deepest self, that kind of following direction, of listening to inner knowing, of being guided, is the most powerful way of living that I have seen in 30 plus years of being a professional coach, but 50 plus years of living on the planet. And even in 50 years, even though I've done this professionally for 30, to my mind, I still suck at it. But I do know where to look. I do know what to listen to. I do have a sense of where my bread is buttered. Now, what do you think? What comes to mind for you when I say that?
I think along the lines of how do I know what to listen for? Or like you said, you have a sense of what you're knowing. What would you say would help a person be more in touch with that part if they feel they're not hearing the guidance or the guidelines where to go?
Well, there's a most people, it's there a lot more than they think it is. So I used to do, and I used to do a sort of a party trick, as it were. Not really a party trick. It's kind of like a coaching trick. But so somebody has a decision to make. So do you happen to have a decision that you are actively looking to make?
Yes. Okay. I am looking to go into a new career field, but I don't know where to go.
Okay. So do you have within that, are there sort of, and just this is, I'm artificially creating it this way for the purposes of demonstrating this, but like, is there something within that that you kind of go, well, okay, here are my two main ideas right now?
I do enjoy exploring the topic of spirituality and all the many facets of it and working with people to bring them to a better place in their life.
Okay, and if you weren't going to do that, what would be the other best option?
As far as a new career?
Yeah, or it might be sticking with the career you've got if you don't have another idea of a new career.
Traveling on a free expense account.
Well, okay, so for the purposes of this, because I'm guessing you don't have a free expense account to travel on.
Right.
Just for illustration. So I understand this is artificial, but it's an answer to your question as well. So let's take as one of the two choices, working towards a career where you explore spirituality and help people, And the other one is carrying on work-wise with what you do now. Okay. Now, I'm going to flip a coin. Heads, you take the spirituality path. Tails, you carry on.
Okay.
So now, before I flip the coin, what do you hope it lands on, heads or tails?
Did you say heads is the
spiritual path? Heads is the helping people with spirituality. Tails is carrying on with
yes,
what you're doing now.
Yes, definitely that.
You're hoping for heads. Okay.
Yes.
So I'm flipping the coin. Okay. It's come up tails. Are you relieved or disappointed?
Disappointed.
Okay. So you know what you want to do. Right. It's that simple. It's not the coin flip. It's that you have an opinion before it's even flipped.
Right.
So we've all got that. We all have that inner knowing. But I bet if I asked you, and I'm not going to ask you right now, but I bet if I asked you, you could come up with a list of reasons why that's impractical, not a great idea, and you can't do it.
Right.
So that's why we think we don't have a connection to our inner knowing. Because we're by the time we check in to see, we're already so far down the logical conversation about why we can't or shouldn't or should or have to that we don't take the intuitive sense seriously. Now, here's the thing. What if it was not only possible, but it was a really legitimate way to live to go, okay, I know I want to move in the direction of doing something that helps people with spirituality. And I don't ultimately have any idea right now, or maybe I do have some ideas about what that is, but I am going to follow that. I'm going to take the first step, no more, no less, and allow the next to be revealed. What would be a next step in that direction?
Well, what I've been doing currently is just exploring different workshops on different topics to see what piqued my interest.
Okay, and what's something that's piqued your interest?
Actually, astrology.
Okay, and have you begun flirting with astrology?
I have.
Okay, and have you gone on any dates with it yet? Like, have you actually taken some time to actively do a session?
I have a few, yes, but nothing long-term type workshop.
Okay. And so I'm going to assume that in most areas of life, you kind of get that it makes sense to flirt before you date and date before you get serious about dating and then maybe get serious about dating before you get engaged and then get married, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's the same with something like this. So right now you're in the dating stage.
Right.
So keep going on dates. And if at some point you start to kind of think, oh, there might be something here. This, I want to get serious about this. Well, then that will be the next step.
So enjoy the journey and don't get disappointed when it's not handed to you in a beautiful wrapped up ribbon.
Well,
it all laid out.
Let's put it this way. You're welcome to get disappointed, but you really shouldn't be surprised. Because there's not much in life that gets handed to you wrapped up in a ribbon.
Yes. Yes.
See, it's so much simpler than we think that we miss it. Like, you actually already know exactly what to do, which is try the next thing.
Right.
It's just
right.
It's not sexy. Right. It doesn't sound sound like, oh my God, I know what to do. Try something.
Thunderbolt. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, it's just impatience sometimes that it's not a sexy turn of the corner at this moment.
Yeah. And the gorgeousness of it, as I found it, and maybe this is just me, but I know it's also not just me because I've talked to so many people about this, is that if you are okay with enjoying the hell out of now, then the sense of being in a rush and impatient disappears.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If you're not enjoying now, then of course you're impatient.
Right. Yes, true.
So there's a simplicity. Again, I've been talking the whole show about real-time responsive intelligence. Well, part of that is when we're really engaged in real time, we do enjoy life. We do enjoy the moment. What's not often enjoyable is overthinking things. It's enjoyable for 5 minutes and then it turns dark.
Right. So too much in the mind and dropping into the heart and maybe some fun dance.
It is that simple. And it's almost like, you know, people go, well, that it can't be that simple. Just enjoy myself and do the next thing. Actually, I'm pretty sure it's that simple.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very cool, Jennifer.
Sounds like a good idea. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you. You know, maybe that is what we're up against. Maybe that is why we don't listen to that intuition more, is because it is rarely the voice. It rarely sounds like the voice of God. There was a wonderful quote the Zen teacher Sherry Huber wrote in one of her books. That voice inside your head is not the voice of God. It just sounds like it thinks it is. We kind of expect intuition, psychic phenomena to be profound, and occasionally it is, but my experience is more often than not it has a quality of ordinariness. It's like, oh, that, do you want the ham or the turkey? Oh, turkey. Right? Do you want to try this or that? Oh, no, I don't want to try. I'll try that, that sounds neat. It if we're waiting for the thunderbolt and lightning, if we're waiting for it to arrive in a big package with a shiny red bow instead of the 19th Amazon box that's arrived in our apartment building for the last week, then we miss it. If we only open the shiny packages and don't just open whatever package arrives today, then we're gonna miss what's inside. And then we're going to get to the point one day where we go, I knew it. I should have done. I knew it. Or sometimes it's the other way. I knew it. Oh, my God. I knew it. I somehow knew to do that. I didn't even notice. And we start to get a kind of a respect for it. A kind of an appreciation for the simplicity of that knowing. And then just life gets better. I remember when I was first really seeing this, it really struck me that I kept talking myself out of my knowing. And I put a post-it note, a sticky note on the sun visor, the shade that you pull down when you're driving, the thing that blocks the sun. I think it is a sun visor. I put a note on there that whenever I flicked it down, it said, follow your knowing, even when you're wrong. Because I realized that's what it was. I would kind of know what to do, and then I would be worried that, yeah, but what if I'm wrong? And then I suddenly realized, well, I'm less interested at this point in this specific project or how this specific thing turns out than actually functioning more from this understanding, operating more from this deeper part of myself, operating more from my inner knowing, letting that be the master and logic be the servant. And it was interesting because as soon as I did that, and it wasn't about putting the note up, but it was as soon as I kind of went, you know what, I'm going to follow my knowing even when I'm wrong, which means even if I think I'm going to be wrong, even if I'm worried about being wrong, even if it doesn't turn out the way I'd hoped or thought that it would, I started hearing it more. You know, it's almost like if you keep ignoring somebody, they'll probably stop talking to you. In fact, Some people do that deliberately as a way to get people to stop talking to them. You know, if you keep not picking up the phone when someone calls, at some point they will stop calling. Well, it's kind of like that with our inner knowing. I mean, if we keep ignoring it, it stops calling. Now, it doesn't give up forever, but it does kind of go on holiday. And then as soon as we start attending to it again, as soon as we start listening again, it starts talking more. We start hearing it more. Years ago, long before I'd learned anything about the Inside Out understanding or the things I talk about on this show each week, I had the experience I read a book called 1 Minute for Yourself by Spencer Johnson, the guy who wrote Who Moved My Cheese. And the idea at the heart of it was very simple, which was that every now and again throughout your day, for a minute, you would stop and you would ask yourself, what could I do to take better care of myself right now? And then you do it. Now, I was probably 19 and I was dealing with depression and suicidal ideation and I was really struggling. And it was such a simple idea, but I found such comfort in it. Now, at the time, I thought of it as cool technique number 104, and I collected thousands of them. But looking back on it, I can see that it was just natural law in form. It was just a way of tricking myself into listening to that ever-present, real-time, responsive intelligence. Now, I don't tend to do that anymore purposefully. I don't tend to, okay, I must remember to stop and ask myself, what could I do to take better care of myself right now? And then do it. I just find myself taking better care of myself as I go. I'm sufficiently used to listening that it no longer even seems like a conversation. I'm just doing what I know to do. I'm doing the best I can. And surprisingly often, it's pretty amazing what happens. If this is the kind of thing you're interested in, we've got one of my favorite programs. I run it most years. I've run it in Mallorca. I've run it in Dubai. And this year we're going to run it in Singapore. It's called Living a Guided Life. And we spend 5 days just exploring this, but for reals, as my kids would say. Just exploring what it is to let guidance, to let knowing, to let life, to let God, to let spirit, to let your highest self, to let however it is you think about it, to let that part of us that knows be in charge. And one of the things that I have found so extraordinary about that over the years is the kindness of the unfolding. How in my mind, I live in fear that if I do that, what if my guidance tells me I have to leave this person that I love? What if my guidance tells me I have to do this job that I hate? What if this guidance tells me I have to go somewhere I don't want to go? Well, all I can tell you is in 30 plus years, it never has. And in fact, the more I listen, the more I follow, the more the life that unfolds seems like the perfect life for me, the more the path that I take feels like it is unfolded brick by brick, step by step, from my very soul. So if you want to learn a little bit more about that, there's a TEDx talk I did last December in Switzerland, which is online, which is called Can a TED Talk Really Change the World? Or it might be, Can a TEDx Talk Really Change the World? And you can look that up and you can watch that. It's about 14 minutes. And I really kind of explore what it is to follow that. And then if you're interested in going further, check out michaelneal.org and click on Living a Guided Life. And you can learn more about that. And I think we've got one more show before I go on my summer hiatus. So I will be back with you. Yeah, I'll be back with you one last time live next week, and we'll have replays for the next few weeks after that. And in the meantime, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk with you soon. Bye-bye for now.